Good morning, Jerry.
Excellent day here in Austin. How's it going up there in Chicago?
Oh, postcard perfect. Both today and tomorrow. Looks like it's going to be in the 80s down here downtown. Probably reach 90 out in the burbs. My favorite non-baseball weekend. We have the Literature Fest, Printers Row Book Fair.
Yeah, I went to that with you one time. That was great.
Yeah, so I love to go looking through books, and the weather's going to be perfect for it.
Nice.
So got off to a good weekend yesterday by going to watch the Cubs lose. So I'm in a good mood.
Good.
What can I say?
Yeah. You like those White Sox? I understand. All right. Wow. We got a lot of stuff on our plate today. I think we're going to have fun.
Yes, I do believe we will.
Let's get started.
Well, starting with the sports segment. A week ago, I was out of town in Indianapolis. I travel with a group of veteran Society for American Baseball Research members. Once a year, we end up going to a minor league destination. We've been doing it for 27 years and seen over 40 minor league teams/ballparks in that time. And finally, after many years of trying to arrange it, we were able to go to Indianapolis this past weekend.
Yeah.
So, during that, we usually like to try to do a few things that are not going to games, you know, try to find some extra things to do. And I ran into something in Busch in Indianapolis I thought would be very interesting. And that is, their old ballpark called Busch Stadium without the C, B-U-S-H, named after a baseball player, Donnie Busch, who later got involved with the minor league club. Their stadium, their old ballpark, which was in a state of disrepair, has been converted into condominiums. So if you were a baseball fan and felt a need to spend 24/7 in a ballpark, this is your place to live.
Wow. I really like this. You sent me the pictures and stuff, and it's incredible.
Yeah, what happened was this ballpark was built in 1931. It's got a beautiful Art Deco concrete facade with an intricate amount of detail in the columns. So as you approach it, that's what you see.
Yeah, yeah.
Now what's happened is that core redevelopment is the property development and property manager, and they have actually got their whole niche is taking old buildings. Those buildings could be the standard ones you hear that are made into residence hotels. They've taken schools. They've taken office buildings. They've taken a variety of things. But this is the first venture that I've ever seen where a redevelopment company has decided to go in and actually take an old ballpark, gut it out, but keep as much as they can in terms of the structure there. And what they did is they built three stories of condominiums in it. So your condominium, and they've got also a bunch of lofts in the back. So altogether, they've got 134 units, and over half those units are facing towards the ballpark, the field. The other units are lofts that are facing the other way. We had an opportunity to go into some of the units, but I can tell you right now that this place is full of amenities. It's an apartment building complex, so it's not condos, it's apartments.
Yeah.
Rents seem pretty good to me. You know, you know, I'm in Chicago, but two bedrooms, $1,400 a month didn't seem too bad.
No.
So what was intriguing about it was that as you in the units themselves, you can see the beams that are kind of, you know, on the walls that are more like, you know, kind of diagonally as where the seats might have, you know, been going up and down.
Right.
You look out onto the field and you can see what they've done is they've actually got left the press box up there, although it's not occupied, and they've left the lights. So one of the features they do is at night, they put the lights on between like about 7 o'clock and 10 o'clock at night. So you are overlooking the ballpark.
Man.
Now the actual ballpark is used in many cases for events, either within the complex or public events. There, you can't go out there and necessarily, you know, start playing a softball game or something. Although they have left the configuration of the base paths up and they've made it into concrete.
Yeah, yeah. So that's interesting. I see they would have to do that for maintenance, but it kind of ruins it for actually playing ball on
Yeah,
it.
There's no action. I mean, you go out there and play catch and something like that, but don't expect to, you know,
is there a mound?
Be involved in a 9-inning game of baseball.
Is there a mound?
No, there's no mound. There is a mound, but it's a flat mound. So, I mean, and it's actually concrete.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, you can see the mound. We went into a first floor unit, which means that you could walk, open the sliding glass doors, and you're out on the field.
Wow. That is so cool.
Yeah. And what they've done is they got three stories. So the other two stories, the second and third floor, what you do is they've got balconies.
Yeah,
so you can go out on your balcony and take a look and sit out there and look at the field. I was really impressed. They're fully leased practically. I mean, there's 140 units and only three of them were available for us to look at.
Wow.
So it's a very successful venture that's located about a mile northwest of downtown. So it gives you good access to downtown Indianapolis. You can either go by way of car, or there's bike trails. You know, you can walk. But it's in
How's
an industrial.
Public transit any good there?
It's pretty good. They don't have light rail. They don't have light rail airport or anything like that. They've got a pretty solid bus transportation system. I saw a lot of bicycles. So it's a bicycle friendly town.
Good.
Indianapolis in itself, I was kind of amazed. We stayed downtown near the three or four blocks south of their new ballpark. And it's a convention town. I was amazed. Their convention center stretches like six city blocks, and it's connected to over 4,000 hotels. So they host over 1,000 conventions. So it's pretty
– wow.
Their downtown's pretty lively. It's a
yeah.
And so it you know, and they've got – in fact, their minor league club, the Indianapolis Indians, which plays in their new ballpark downtown, established the record last year. They had the highest attendance of any minor league team
last year.
It's a thriving city with a thriving baseball interest. I had an opportunity to meet the woman, Jerry Strecker, who is a professor at at Ball State in Indianapolis. Ball State's located, I think, in Muncie, but their satellite campus there in Indianapolis. She is, I met her at the Society for American Baseball Research Conference. She was the very first tenant. Her unit is practically, I didn't see it, but is a baseball museum. She has got artifacts all over. So she's among the large group of baseball fans who have, you know, have decided to make this their place to live. And it's fairly close to the Indiana University, Purdue University in Indianapolis. That's a combination university. So there's a lot of students that live there. I was impressed when I went out on the field. People noticed how I was taking an interest in it. And sure enough, somebody got out on the balcony and said, "Isn't this neat?" You know, just praising
they're enthusiastic
how wonderful
about living
they
there,
like
huh?
it there. What's that?
They're enthusiastic about living there.
Yeah. So there's a real upbeat atmosphere. I also met a couple of the co-eds from the school that lived there, and they were just saying how wonderful it is. You could just tell on the smile of their faces, like, we got something over you. We're living in the ballpark.
I think that's so cool. You know, we were talking about this the other day. It, you know, the day-to-day life of most people, especially once they get their career settled and they're just going to work and raising kids or whatever they're doing, it's just pretty blah. And so it must be kind of cool thinking you're driving home. I live in a ballpark. That must be cool.
Yeah, it is really nice. The ballpark itself, like I said, was built in 1931. It's got a lot of history. Just to give you a bit of the history, the Indianapolis minor league AAA club played there through about 1996, and they were affiliated with a variety of different clubs. But I think the better part of their history is the fact that this was the home of the Negro League team that was in Indianapolis called the Indianapolis Clowns.
Wow.
This was one of the last Negro League clubs to fold. What it did was most of the Negro League teams folded soon after the integration of baseball into the major leagues with Jackie Robinson in 1947. I would say within 7 years, practically 80% of the teams are folded. Indianapolis Clowns continued as a kind of Harlem Globetrotter team that would barnstorm. They did that well into the 60s. The Clowns, their famous player that played for them was in the early, was just as the Negro Leagues were kind of having their demise. Right. Henry Aaron played for the Indianapolis Clowns. So Hall of Famer Henry Aaron had his organized baseball, not major leagues, but with Negro Leagues with the Indianapolis Clowns. So they have a great amount of history. The ballpark, after it discontinued its use, the stadium as a ballpark, continued to be used as a speedway for a couple of years. And this is, in the late 1990s. And then became a refuge for used cars, clunkers.
Oh, my.
So it was just one of the challenges that the core redevelopment had to do was get rid of all the cars that were on the field. Were just old, beat-up cars. So they started their redevelopment in 2013. Units opened in 2015. And I can just say that if I was in Indianapolis, I don't think I would have too much difficulty in figuring out where I would want to live.
No, I guess not.
I would like to see perhaps they continue, the other organizations or redevelopment companies take a hard look at some of these other old minor league parks that are still in existence and consider this as an alternative use.
I think in general, they're called Core Development. That's the name of the company.
It was called Core Redevelopment is the name of the company. You can Google them and take a look.
That's a wonderful thing they do in general, ballparks aside.
Yeah, what they try to do is they look at the historic angle. They can get a fair number of what they did here, for example, to keep the cost down, and they made it three stories so they don't need to have elevators.
Right.
And so they took a look at the location so they could get credits from the government.
Smart.
So they know their biz very well and how to do it in a way that will allow them to then lease out the apartments at a reasonable cost.
That's nice.
So, that's real good. So, that's basically my segment on sports. I suggest if you are interested, take a look at Core Redevelopment, take a look at Busch Stadium, Google it, and you can get more information.
Taking a look at that ballpark, I assume online they have a fair number of pictures and stuff you can see. I just saw stuff you sent me.
Yeah, well, you can go, and if you go to Core Redevelopment, you can get they will show you not only the ballpark, but they'll show you the inner side. And like most apartment complexes that are located in the city that cater to professionals just as this one would, they had a bunch of amenities, a lot of conference rooms, exercise rooms. It was kind of funny. They said, now, if you want to, we were pitching these apartments based upon what was actually physically there beforehand. So, he could point out, that was where the men's restroom is, that unit. This is a unit where the woman's restroom was. I mean, that's how the tour we had was really fun, as they talked about the different things that were located where they actually put either units or a lot of their amenities. So, it's fully loaded. You're going to be able to barbecue pits, all that stuff is there for you to use outside like you would normally see. So, I was very impressed with the way that they've professionally done the units. So,
So cool. You surprised me. We've talked about this during the week, but I had no idea Hank Aaron played for the Clowns. Wow.
I just happened to run across that.
I always liked him. I thought he's a pretty good player.
He's a very modest individual who quite often was labeled as a player because he came up with this quote one time that Yogi Berra used to like to talk to the players. And during their World Series, Aaron comes up to bat. And Yogi would say, you got the label on your bat going the wrong way. It should be going up. And Henry Aaron said to him, I'm not up here to read. I'm up here to hit. So, I mean, sometimes he got a reputation of being just a real physical guy who, had these tremendous physical tools. But a man does not continue to be as productive as he was long in their career if they don't become a very, very smart hitter and know and just know what's going on out there in terms of each pitcher. So Henry Aaron would not only, when he get up there, you hear about guest hitters. Well, you know, in certain situations, it's good to do that. And Henry, he would not only guess what the pitch was going to be, but he would pretty well be able to figure out where it was going to go.
Wow.
You know, so he was not only type of pitch, but also location. So he was nice. Able to, through his smarts, extend his career to the point that, of course, he was able to beat Babe Ruth's record, which is a whole other subject matter.
Yeah. But, that's what I remembered him for. Wow. Okay. Well, that's interesting stuff. You know, I had no idea.
Felt good that I was able to do this unique thing there.
Yeah, I had no idea such a thing existed, and I guess you knew about it since its inception.
Well, I knew about it 3 years ago when I met Jerry, the first tenant, and she raved about, you know, how wonderful it was. So it's been on the back of my mind once I got to Indianapolis to take a look at it, and fortunately the property development company Core, their employee that was on that day, was incredibly useful, very service oriented. He showed us so much stuff. We were bouncing around there for 45 minutes looking at different things, and really appreciate his name was Dominic. I don't remember his last name, but just to give him credit for that, I have to.
A little shout out there, yeah.
Little shout out to Dominic. Good job.
Yeah, we're gonna have to send an email or something to these guys, let them know that we did a segment on them and stuff. I think that'd be cool.
Yeah, very doable.
This Jerry woman, we should definitely send one to her.
Jerry, yeah, I'll send one to Jerry also. But I've got their, I can definitely send out an email to Dominic. Dominic Beard, B-E-A-R-D. He gave me a nice brochure on the stadium. They're called the Stadium Lofts, by the way.
Nice.
So if you're going to Google it, Google Stadium Lofts, Indianapolis. That'll take you right to the redevelopment and allow you to get more information. Yeah, I've got floor plans galore here. Brochure. So,
well,
it's all good.
Yeah, it is all good. Our next film segment, we're going to talk about Guardians of the Galaxy. And I was just thinking in the back of my mind while you're talking, it'd be pretty cool that someone make a place for people to live that's Guardian of the Galaxy's theme. Wouldn't that be cool?
That would be pretty astounding, considering the
CGI.
The CGI. I mean, I just read where 50% of the movie is live act. You know, is that special effects action? So I mean, that would be challenging.
Yeah, a little challenging. But let's talk about the movie and a couple things. That one of the reasons that this came up this week is that, you know, we talk during the week and we review the news and all kinds of stuff like that. And what I find is happening more and more is that, we get influenced by the news we're watching all the time and other things going on in our lives, obviously. And then certain movies kind of stand out to us, you know. And also, I think this is true in general, that certain movie franchises grow up in a certain era. And because of the era and what's going on during the era, they change a little bit. They become more very important to the culture of the times. And I think Guardians of the Galaxy, it's a franchise. It's only two movies, but I think they've gotten off to a roaring start. It belongs to a genre that I call comic book / science fiction. And there's a couple of reasons I bring this up. One is that I think the rules, and there are rules, of course, like, for instance, sequels. There's a sequel rule. And the sequel rule is the second or third is never as good as the first. Everybody always says that. I think that comic book movie franchises, they get a little more slack when it comes to sequels and even prequels, because it's a comic book. And comic books are serial. You understand that. It's given. So that's what you got going into this. And so I think they get a little more slack for serials and for prequels and sequels. So I think that's going to be a big deal going forward. And I think this thing's got legs, and we'll talk about why here. Number one, the first one. And John didn't get to see this, but you got to see the second one, right?
Right. I've seen the second one, which, by the way, is one of the reasons we can do that fits this week, is because the second movie actually came out within the last two or three weeks. So it's still out there.
Oh, yeah.
Showing, there's a lot of screens out there that are showing Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Right. So the first one's filmed in 2014. Obviously, the second one now is just being released, so it's a couple years later. So that kind of gives you a setting in terms of the timing of when these two movies came out. But I look forward to talking about the fact that, you know, this series, and by the way, when we talk comic books, we're talking Marvel Comics.
Yeah.
Is the actual movie, and they've done about 10 different movies, but this is a little bit different in terms of the, you know, of the players, and so, I look forward to talking about, you know, the actual films and what makes them a little bit different and why we think they have legs to continue.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think the number one, a lot of people talk about their use of period music. Obviously, science fiction, it takes place, in a galaxy far away, et cetera, et cetera. And I think in terms of Earth years, it may be our Earth years. But, you know, things are very different on different planets. They're scientifically advanced. Their cultures are it's interesting because in these kinds of movies, you'll find that the cultures are more primitive and at the same time more sophisticated. They're technically advanced and sometimes barbaric. So there's a whole mixture of kinds of people, kinds of cultures, kinds of planets, one moon, two suns, one sun, black holes, all kinds of stuff going on. Time, you know, these the kind of engines they have on their spaceships where they can, you know, fold time space and show up someplace else in the galaxy quickly and evade people. That's been going on for a long time. But what's cool is they use old-timey, for us, music. And it's not that old, but you know,
it's 60s and 70s music. I was impressed by the fact that quite often with these movies, you like the music in the background, but the music for this movie is connected directly to the movie.
Yes,
in other words,
it
isn't like it's background music. It is music that has a purpose with respect to one of the characters.
Yes. So he needs these songs. He uses these songs because it ties him back to his mother, who he's still grieving for, who died on Earth. And, you know, he got picked up by some ravagers. They're a certain kind of a space guy who they go. It's a good name. They go raiding all the time and they steal stuff and they're kind of a
space pirates.
Yeah, that's it. And so, yeah, he got picked up by a bunch of ravagers and we discover why in the second movie. But in the first movie, we don't know why. He just got picked up and boom, he's out of there. Never sees his family again. His mother just died. She gave him this little cassette player with her favorite songs on it, and that is sacred to him. And so those songs give him inner strength and confidence and a lot of stuff. So he uses those songs strategically just to have fun sometimes, and he's on a new planet. He went to go get something, you know, for the Ravagers, and he's having fun, and he's kicking around and playing these songs in his headphones, and he loves to dance. So and his favorite thing is to, when he gets in a tight spot, he tries to throw his enemies off and says, well, I'm not going to fight you. I want to have a dance off. So he uses this music strategically, and it's wonderful to see. And the first time you see it, you kind of go, oh, this is lame. But it's not. Pretty cool, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I mean, the character we're talking about is Peter Quill, who plays with, and it is sort of like his alternate space name is Star-Lord. So he's sort of like the leader of this
group. He knows it, though, in the first movie.
Yeah.
He made it up.
And so he says, I'm Star-Lord. And he looks at him like, well, you don't know who I am. And of course they don't know who he is because he just made it up.
Right.
But the other thing that's kind of interesting about it is you mentioned the Ravagers. So immediately we're confronted with a character here who is, his upbringing has not exactly been stellar. This is not leading a road to, you know, business success here.
No.
At best you might call him a bounty hunter. At worst you could call him a criminal.
A thief.
He's somewhere in between. And so he kind of, he's leading a kind of an edgy life is I guess the best way you'd want to describe it. So we're not talking a guy that's squeaky clean here.
No.
Who's the main character who later becomes, as it evolves, the head of, is the lead character of the Guardians, of the four Guardians who are responsible for guarding the galaxy.
Yes. And they're not Guardians until the end of the first movie where they save the galaxy essentially from destruction by these Infinity Stones. So it's a great plot. In you know, we're not going to go through the whole thing here. We're just going to highlight what we really like about the movies. These characters. We have to talk a little about these characters besides
Right.
Will.
I think the characters are the key.
Oh.
Here.
Wow. I'm a little stunned by the characters. And, you know, I'm not prone to like these movies, by the way. My wife, my son, my daughter, they all love these things. And my son Joe, who's deceased, he loved these things. And he was a comic book nut. All comic books, didn't matter what kind they were. He collected them, loved them, read them. And he loved any comic book movie. But this one stood out for me. And these characters are one of the reasons why. The people who play them, the way they're portrayed, the way they... It's really cool. And the thing is, Quill's the character, the actor who plays Quill is kind of an unknown guy, and he never thought he'd get the part. And he's surrounded by some pretty good hitters, some people who have a little you know, legend behind
them. Yeah. Well, the thing is that the Chris Pratt, who plays Peter Quill, he was kind of feeling a little bit indifferent, kind of put off by the idea of even considering this movie, since he had been kind of lost out a couple other times. And actually the director, James Gunn, wasn't too interested, but the casting director pushed to the point that he had an interview with James Gunn, who's the, like I said, the director. Gunn was immediately impressed. I mean, it was a no-brainer as far as he's concerned, that Chris Pratt should play the lead character, Peter Quill. So he's not what you call a top line,
right,
above the title star. He's not a name. But he has had some good movie experience, so that was good. But the characters come from so many different directions.
Oh wow!
David Bautista plays one of the guardians, and Jerry, maybe you can talk a little bit about him. Drax, the Destroyer, is who he plays.
Yeah, the character's fascinating. He's got a great voice, and I think it's been enhanced. He's big. This guy's huge. He's a wrestler. And he's built like a tank, and they have like body stuff on him that's quite breathtaking. I think it's a shade of green or something too. And he's just spectacular to look at. But he's got all the people from his planet are completely literal. They don't understand metaphors or anything like that. They're not subtle people. And he lost his family, so he's in a rage almost constantly during the first movie. And so. We're confronted with this character. These guys are thrown together. These characters are thrown together because they've all done something to get tossed into the Nova jail.
Yes, jail. Right. So they're in one of the jails there. Yeah, David Bautista. His color is a little off of it. In the comic books, I guess it's green, but they decided to make it a little muddier
orange.
Gray.
Yeah,
orange to kind of avoid any similarities to the Hulk. It takes 4 hours for this guy to put his makeup on every morning and about an hour and a half just to get it off.
Man, that's dedication.
Yeah. So he's not CGI, but he pays the price for being real.
He has the greatest lines, too. I think he's one of the funniest. Yeah, he's one of the funniest guys in the whole thing. And he because of this problem all the people from this planet have with literalism and stuff, he's trying to evolve during the movie. He's trying to do things like comfort people. And he can't help it. He just states bald facts and says very hurtful things to people and trying to comfort them. And it's great because it's super comic relief. He's one of the best comic relief characters, I think, in the whole movie. And he's spectacular to look at, too. So I think that's one good character. And the Ravager, the head Ravager, is a very interesting guy. We've seen this guy all over in movies. He's got kind of an Oklahoma accent. He's got a kind of a cowboy swagger to him. And you see this in almost every movie he does, even when he plays a city cop or something like that. It's always there a little bit. And he just got that look. And he's got great makeup, too. He's got this little kind of thing on the crest on the top of his head that's got some enhancements. So his brain works a little better than most people. He's got incredible-looking teeth. It looks like he could take a bite out of you. And, of course, he always points out to Quill that he kept the other crew members from eating them when they picked them up. So.
Yeah, that's Micah Rooker is his real name, and he's got that kind of blue look to him. So each of these guys has got kind of a unique color to him.
Of course.
These characters. So he, by the end of it, you know, he's the kind of guy that you kind of at the beginning, when I was watching the second movie, thought he was a bad guy, but then realized by the end of the movie, he's a good guy.
He got a heart of gold.
And that's the way these characters, a lot of these characters evolve. We've talked about, you know, David, Chris Pratt, who's playing the main leader of the group. And we talked about David Bautista, but you've got at least three other players in the three other guardians that are really good. The woman guardian is very interesting. She's one who's a veteran of these science fiction movies. She's been in a lot of them.
Yes.
Her name is Zoe Saldana, is it? Saldana?
Saldana, yeah.
Saldana.
She was in the Pandora movie, which I thought, that's the first time I really became aware of her. And you really don't know who she is because her CGI work in that thing is so extensive that you don't recognize her. Her voice and her character and everything, she's a good actress. So she can really do stuff. She's not just like a personality. She's a good character actor, and she gets into this character really well. She's got a great smoldering stare. She's beautiful. She's going to be the love interest for Peter Quill, but they have a lot of conflict and other things during the course of it. She can't dance, which is a real problem for him. And Drax, you know, is trying to comfort him about that. And you just need to find somebody as something as you, as dysfunctional as you, or something as a big loser as you. That's what you need to do, you know. And he's trying to comfort
him. Zoe, her title name is her a character name is Gamora.
Gamora.
She's a paid assassin. So
yes.
She's also edgy.
Oh,
we didn't mention that Drax, played by David Bautista, has got this. He's trying to avenge his family's death, and while he does it, he's just wreaking havoc. That's his.
Everywhere.
That's his thing.
Yeah, everywhere. Yeah. Now there's two others that are these other two are pairs. These are the most unlikely pair you can imagine. These are genetically enhanced plant and animal. The animal is a raccoon, but he's been genetically enhanced. He's got electrodes going all up and down his spine, you know, that make him work a little better, and he's been bred for this thing in a laboratory, and he talks. He's got a mouth on him. And it's played by Bradley Cooper as the voice. And you'd never know it was Bradley Cooper. He sounds like he's what, from New York or something, John, you think?
Yeah, he's a smart ass. He's kind of somewhere between a smart ass and impish. He's the one who always seems to go a little bit too far and gets everybody in trouble.
He's a mastermind too, though. That's the thing is, he's the best of the group of getting out of really bad situations. He breaks them out of the jail they're in. In the first movie, but when he does these things, this is one of his things, is he says, okay, I've got a plan. And then he tells everybody what to do, but he throws a ringer in there. He always throws a ringer. He says, I need this, this, this. And the last thing he says is always something so totally outlandish that the people take him seriously and they do it. And so in the first movie, he says, and I need a prosthetic limb. So, okay. And so Quill or somebody rips the arm off of some poor guy in the jail and brings it to him when they're escaping and says, here's the arm. And he says, oh, yeah, I didn't really need that. I just wanted to see you do it. That's the kind of character he is. Now, that's cool, but his partner is Groot. And you'll hear a lot about Groot. Groot is a tree, but he's also genetically enhanced. And his ability to speak and think is not the same as an animal's would be. He is a very highly evolved tree, but he is nevertheless a tree. And he moves a little slower, but he can do things with his tree-ness to really protect Rocket. And so they're a great pair. And his mental challenge is he can only say, I am Groot. And the cool thing about it is, although that's all he says, Rocket and Rocket alone can understand what he's really saying when he says, I am Groot. So sometimes it means I'm in distress. Sometimes it means I'm not going with you, you know, but Rocket knows what it is. And the dialogues are so funny. Those two characters are really, really a treat. And the voice of Groot is Vin Diesel, if I'm not mistaken. Right, John?
Vin Diesel. Yeah, it's Vin Diesel. And, you know, Vin Diesel's got a very low, his resonance is incredible, but You would get none of that
Never.
Out of this character. He's made his voice based upon the character itself, which I would characterize Groot as sort of like a tree humanoid is what he's referred to. And Van Diesel said this was a real challenge because you're basically given the same words that you've got to say throughout the movie and have them mean something different every time you say them. That's
yes.
a challenge.
It is a challenge. And not just that, but they use Vin Diesel's body to do the movements. And if you've watched people do these things, there's a lot of goodness when the speaker of a character that's entirely CGI is also the one they base the movements on, because the way you talk and move kind of go together. So they put little sensors all over, you know, people know how it works by now. They put sensors on the body, they track it, and then they map it to the CGI as it moves around on the screen. And so Groot's movements are really interesting. That part's cool. I have no idea what they're using for his movements, because it can't be Bradley Cooper. I don't know what they do.
The challenge here, you know, normally you think of voiceovers as cartoons where guys are just using their voice, but these actors have a responsibility through the computer-generated images to then display movements that they will then use as points by which they then create the character, you know, the actual physical thing that goes on the screen. And what's interesting about it, I did a little research on this, but they actually used two people. Bradley Cooper did a lot of it.
Really?
In terms of Rocket, the raccoon. But James Gunn's brother actually was a stand-in who did a fair amount of it also. So there were
Rocket
Sean Gunn. So Rockets, so what you have is it reminds me of the movies where the main characters have stand-ins.
Yeah.
Well, Bradley Cooper had James Gunn's brother, Sean, stand in, but he's more than a stand-in. He was doing some of the movements also.
Nice.
So I guess in that way, it's a family movie, too.
Oh,
you
yeah.
got your brother in
Coppola,
it.
Coppola, like him, yeah.
I also feel that the part of the fun with the comedy is the relationship between Rocket, who's the smartass, and you got Groot the tree, who has limited intelligence.
And innocent, and very loving and innocent. He's not a cruel guy, unless someone tries to mess with Rocket, and then he'll kill
you. Yeah, so, you know, Rocket's trying to tell him to do various things and kind of getting a little frustrated, because it takes a little while for Groot to kind of get the swing of what to do.
Yeah, it takes a while for Groot to grok.
Yeah.
Sorry. Had to do it.
So, I think we've discussed the players, you know, in terms of the Guardians. And I think the key to this movie, though, is that to me, one of the important things is that we see at the beginning of the movie these four people, four or five people that are brought together, the Guardians. And they, by the end of the movie, realize we need to hang and we're here for a purpose.
Yeah, because they were all isolated, losers, thieves, bad, good, you know, all kinds of stuff, right? But they found going through these terrible situations together, and they are pretty terrible, they bond, you know. And so by the end of the first movie, right, not only are the Guardians, and they've been recognized by the Nova Council, which is a big deal in the galaxy, I guess, as they got little awards and stuff like that, and their ship got rebuilt for them and all kinds of good stuff. And they end the first movie as heroes and heroines. So that's pretty cool. And they bond, but they're still a little rough on the edges. Then we go into the second movie, and here's where, you know, they actually become like a family. They're not only like a working unit, a military-esque or whatever, the emotional bonds really start to develop during the second movie because of the situations they're in, and other characters start getting drawn into it. And by the end of the second movie, there's an extra character, a Gamora's sister, who actually looks like she's becoming part of the team. What do you think, John? Is she?
Well, yeah, I think Gamora's sister is, she feels very... Like she's been kind of given a bad deal, because apparently she parts of her body were replaced by metal and various things.
Oh.
So she's kind of a composite human that doesn't look very attractive compared to her sister.
Right.
So you got this sibling rivalry. If I had to characterize the second movie is more about family relationships.
Yes.
And the relationships are at a variety of levels.
You've got the Peter Quill, who goes back and meets his father, who's played by Kurt Russell, who has a fairly big role in it. So you learn how they kind of evolve, their relationship evolves. And then you've got the sisters with Gamora. Mm-hmm. Then you've got, this isn't family, but it's Peter Quill's father has a female that kind of hangs in on his planet, who becomes a part of the group, who Drax gets kind of feels a need to kind of, you
protect.
Know, connect yeah. with her. It's not what you call a physical relationship, but it's amazing how they're able to play off each other. And Drax in his own special way is insulting her, and then thinks he's improving the situation by making another comment, which is even worse.
Yes, of course.
And So there's a lot of good comic relief in their relationship. So you're dealing more with these family type relationships
yes.
in there, and that to me is what's going to give this series legs. Is that you mentioned, Jerry, at the beginning that quite often you see the second and third movies and they're not as good as the first. As far as I'm concerned, the second movie is just so different in terms of the way it evolves. That you can't say, well, it's better or worse than the other, because they're two different movies that are both very good.
Exactly. And the good thing about an ensemble cast where you have the main characters are you know, and you can do so much with that number, five, six, whatever it is. It's going up and down a little bit.
It's five. The Guardians are made up of five different.
Yeah. Do you count the Head Ravager guy? Because he was actually, you know, as it turns out, he considered himself to be the adoptive father
yeah.
of Peter Quill. So, you know, he dies at the end of the second movie, and which is quite emotional. There's some really emotional things that go on in that second movie too.
Right.
I mean, they tug at your heartstrings really hard. So yeah, it was a lot of beautiful parts to it. I mean, I really, really, really liked the second movie. Didn't think I would, because I found the premise kind of a jump the shark kind of thing. The whole Kurt Russell thing. At first, I was quite resistant to it because, you know, I thought,
I got sucked in.
Well, that's really interesting. I did too, but I didn't think I would, because, see, I follow these things like an idiot. And, you know, I watch the trailers, which you should not do. And, you know, so, yeah, I went into it going, well, they're going to have to prove this to me. And they did. They actually made it work quite well. But I was not ready to do that, but I did it anyway.
Hey, one thing I wanted to mention, I just found this out this morning. I went and took a look at the director, James Gunn, who we've not said much about. Gunn does not have he doesn't have what you call a resume prior to this movie that would impress you. It's got a lot of science fiction, but it's a lot of it is almost indie science fiction. He got an opportunity to do both of these movies and did an incredible job. He's been a screenwriter, which is the reason that you don't see much in the terms of the director. But you're not going to believe it, Jerry. This guy's got a St. Louis connection.
What is it?
What it is, he's born and raised St. Louis, Manchester, Missouri. Went to St. Louis University High School. Then went to St. Louis University. Had a band in St. Louis in the late 80s. He's a St. Louis guy who his educational pedigree is really good. He ended up going to getting his master's in fine arts at the Columbia University in New York. So this is a guy who's got some interesting background to him, and I couldn't believe it when I saw all this St. Louis coming up.
Well, that is amazing. I mean, I haven't seen anybody like that since John Goodman is the other St. Louis guy who's like really close to our lives in terms of age. And, you know, he's from Afton, Missouri, and we caddied with almost all the caddies who are our age who we caddied with were from Afton. And, you know, here's John Goodman, and went to Southwest. He went to Springfield for college.
We could talk about the St. Louis actors and actresses. John Goodman is the one most recently, but there is just you can go back to Betty Grable, Virginia Mayo. There's a bunch of women actresses
but
in the 40s and 50s.
He's like us. He's like us. See, he's like our that's what I like. That's why he's my favorite St. Louis. Anyways, go see Guardians of the Galaxy. And if you're a St. Louis guy, it's your duty to do that. So sorry.
And if you don't want to stream the first movie, it's actually on cable. If you you can search it, and it's, yes. I think it's on later in the month of June, June 17th and 18th. So you can actually, if you got the typical Showtime HBO package, you probably can find the first one on there. So if you have an opportunity to see both of them.
Oh yeah, I would suggest if you can, I would watch one, however you can see it, and then go watch two if you haven't seen two.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. So let's move on. Fake news. We got a hell of a week. It's funny when we talk about what are we going to talk about with fake news. We'll start talking on Monday, and by Friday, it's completely changed because of some blockbuster crazy thing that happened. And this week, of course, it was James Comey.
Yes, James Comey. He's forefront right there in front of the Senate Intelligence Committee, doing his testimony, and
hotly followed.
Whew. Yes,
worldwide. I talked to my friends overseas. They're all talking about it. I talked to people in Germany, Holland, Australia. Everyone knew about Thursday. Everyone. I was stunned that it was that important to them. Because, for us, I think, let's just state the obvious, no one was really sure he would be allowed. A lot of people thought the special prosecutor might disallow him from coming and testifying. And other people thought Trump's going to try and throw a monkey wrench into this, and he could have, but of course it would have been disastrous and suicidal if he had, and he wisely didn't. And so it went on. It was what it was. It's more my take, and I'd like to hear yours too, John, of course. My take is we had some really good theater. I thought that this is classical kabuki theater, Greek chorus theater, it's like classical theater. That's really what I thought it was, because nothing he said really changed much of anything, in my opinion. We heard things we already knew, et cetera, et cetera. The real thing was him showing up and reacting on his feet to being questioned and sometimes interrogated by these senators. And that was the real show, is that he was so unlike any of the other intelligence people who come before them, even the day before, two hot dog intelligence guys.
Oh, those bozos.
We call them Larry and Moe.
Rodenstein.
Yeah.
Yeah, Larry and Moe.
These guys wouldn't answer. Yeah. They were jackasses. Total jerk.
Yeah, they played the intelligence thing to the hilt, saying that, we can't comment on this because, they would. Anything with respect to conversations they had with Trump, they refused to talk about. Now,
Coates is
a career politician.
Yes.
Who happens to have been, he got through the confirmation process. And I don't know how, because he was a senator from Indiana. He was a House of Representatives, a congressman from Indiana. This guy, I looked through his resume and I don't see the intelligence part of it. Now, apparently somewhere along the line, he got it because they voted him in. He was just ridiculous. But just to comment on Comey, my feeling is that the way he basically presented himself is as important as his content.
Probably
more, because the content itself, as you mentioned, Jerry, I think probably the biggest thing it came out of was the fact that he leaked his memos to the New York Times through a friend, so that he could basically, he felt that would be instrumental in pushing for the special prosecutor.
It was very clever, actually.
Yeah, it was. But I like the point where, and I think this was Senator Feinstein, from senior senator from California, poses the question, why didn't you tell the president that what he was doing was incorrect? And I like the way that Comey was very human about the way he addressed it. He says, look, I was startled. I maybe, giving it more thought, would have been more aggressive with respect to my speech. But, I didn't. I just didn't do that. I'm talking to the president of the United States. I'm floored
just
that
by
he's,
the,
that he's
the,
doing the, this. And then yeah. he said, if I were a stronger man, that was the phrase he used.
Yes. That wow. was incredibly good. How many people, how many politicians are, and this is, he's not even a politician. He's a
not,
career government.
Not yet.
Guy.
We're going to talk about that.
Yeah. That, you know, he's,
let's just say it.
He's 6'8".
He's 6'8". He's like yeah, Abe Lincoln. He's like guy. An Abe Lincoln prototype. You know, or he cannot tell a lie. That's George Washington, of course. But still, he's got that Honest Abe thing. He's huge. He's tall. He's actually kind of handsome looking. And so, yeah, he's, although I have to say, the last appearance he had at the House of Representatives, and then this, the guy looked like he's aged at least 5 or 6 years.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
Yeah, his face, you can see it in his face. It's really taking a toll. And he alluded to it very slightly. You know, that he's under siege. His family and he had they have to hide, you know, basically.
So I think the fact that he leaked the memo is a little different. And also, the other thing is that...
Unabashedly, that too. He was very forthright that, about it. And they tried to make him feel bad. Yeah. Didn't happen. He just went
yeah,
right over
and
it.
Yeah, of course, but the other thing that came out in content that I thought was that was interesting... is the fact that he basically said that he feels that Trump lied. And we're not talking...
Use
know,
that word.
Yeah, and that basically hit... I saw that in a fair amount of headlines.
These
that
are lies. He recounted things. He says, these are all lies.
Yeah, and they have to do with his firing.
Yes.
With the reasons that Trump used. And I mean, we all realized, you know, when Trump came out and said that the reason he fired Comey was because of the
Hillary Clinton.
Leaks... Because for some reason, Trump, I don't know, he felt that that would give him some sort of salvation. Like, oh, I'm a bipartisan guy. Here, oh, give me a break. Jeez.
We're not as stupid
as you.
So
those are the two things. But you mentioned the theater.
Mm.
And the theater, to me, lies with the Senate Intelligence Committee.
The interrogators.
And I began to think about when I didn't watch all of it like you did, Jerry, but I begin to think about the fact that when you see this going on, each of the senators who's on the committee has a different style. Some of them like to pay homage to the person that's there and say, so wonderful you're here. Others like to give some sort of brilliant statement as to the significance of it.
Mm-hmm.
But what amazes me is they don't seem to stumble over each other with respect to questions.
It's obviously scripted.
You're left with the impression that these guys do a dress rehearsal that go in, and I can't imagine they wouldn't because they realize that they're in the forefront. They're going to be on TV and they got their images to protect and preserve. And I'm sure that what they do is they go about making sure that they go through the questions. And I would imagine their staff probably comes up with half the questions at least. And they stage it and it's pretty smooth.
Oh,
it
yeah.
isn't, you know, maybe there's some disruption, but with respect to the actual going from senator to senator, we got, I don't know how many of them all did it. We've got a very smooth presentation.
Absolutely.
And yeah.
Except for one.
The only one. Except for one.
McCain.
John McCain. And here's what's really mind boggling. Jerry, he's not even a full member of the committee. He's an ex officio.
I know. They had to let him talk.
Ex officio means he has no voting responsibility.
But people like to hear what he has to say. That's why he did it, I think, is the general perception.
Well,
but look at what he did. I mean, oh, my God.
But the fact is, when I think of ex officio, I think of a person who comes. He will probably his input will be based upon what people ask him. It's more of a reference point.
Yeah.
It isn't opinion-wise. He's ex officio because he's the chairman of the Armed Forces Committee.
Yes.
By that title, he gets to be on the committee. The other thing I read was that apparently he needed to his participation wasn't a given, so he had announced 3 days beforehand through his press that public relations that he was going to be making testimony. So I get a feeling if he's telling everybody 3 days beforehand. I got a feeling he might not have been a part of the dress rehearsal.
Yes.
I got a feeling he's just showing up and kind of shooting from the hip.
Yeah, but he's got special standing as a senator among senators, I believe, where
they'll
give him that kind of slack. He's a real war hero, and you know people always recognize it. Plus, he surprises you sometimes by how straight he is.
He's a straight shooter.
Yeah.
There's no doubt. But the fact is that I am not, you know, questioning his authority to do what he did. I just think that the fact is that he's kind of standing there alone in terms of, you can just tell that
he's the odd
his
man
wasn't
out.
What you call a fully polished questions that the other people had.
And you should watch this because I'm not going to go over every inch of it, but basically he took a line of questioning with Comey, which even Comey couldn't understand, and he was mixed up. He was bumbling around. He got names mixed up. He meant to say Trump,
Comey. He called President Comey rather than...
Yeah. So, but people give this guy slack. No one corrected him. And this Comey guy is a genius at testifying before the Senate and the House of Representatives. And this was much more polished and less political than the House of Representatives. And these guys were good. You're right, John. They were scripted. They were respectful. There were very few hardballs and very few softballs compared to what we saw in the House. But the odd man out is John McCain, who tries to equate letting Hillary off the hook and saying there's nothing there and not doing that for Trump. And he keeps comparing them. And no, and even Comey points out, says, well, you know, these are really different situations. And one of them's ongoing and involves a whole bunch of people who are possibly engaging in espionage and stuff and collusion. And but he didn't get very far with McCain because he knows better. He has the instincts. Yeah. He has the best instincts I've ever seen of anybody on his feet. This guy knows how to deal with these personalities, with this situation. It was like he was born to do it or something. I've never seen anyone that good in front of this kind of panel. Have you?
No. Yeah, he was really good on his feet. He was very prepared. Comey was. He did an incredible job. Just to kind of bring closure to John McCain, his portion of it was so bad that it really lit up the press to the point that he had to respond to it.
Yes, he issued a statement.
And when he did, and as I tell Jerry, I can bring baseball into anything.
Yes.
John McCain claims that one of the reasons that he was slightly off, disheveled, and not really as logical as he should have been is because he stayed up late the night before to watch the Arizona Diamondbacks play baseball. You know, he's in Washington. The D-backs are in Pacific Coast, so we got a three-hour lag here. The game starts at 7. He's watching a game that starts at 10. So yeah. Probably a three-hour-plus game. So he's watching doggone baseball way past midnight, which I am not raising a question. John's got good taste watching baseball.
Yes.
But it's kind of funny because the D-backs this year are kind of showing a little more life than usual. They're an interesting team. They basically bought a World Series championship in 2001, just 3 or 4 years after they're forming themselves. And since then, they've just been kind of the doormats of the Western Division of the National League. But this year, they're showing some respectability. So John's on the bandwagon, and
they're
can't blame him for doing that.
Yeah.
He paid the price because the next day he was not exactly 100%.
Yeah, but you know what? Everyone's going to forgive him.
Oh, yeah.
People love John McCain. The press loves John McCain. I heard commentators talk about it, and they're going, hey, you know, I'm like a progressive and everything like that, but I love John McCain, and it broke my heart to see him crumble. You know, and amazing the following this guy has. And it is kind of amazing he never became president because people do love this guy. And I do. And I'm not all that conservative, but geez, I love the way he just tells it like it is. Sometimes he shoes off his handlers and just says what he wants to. I wish more politicians would do that, provided, of course, they have something to say. And here comes the second part of this whole thing. For me, one of my big takeaways was James Comey. Holy cow, you know, and he did a throwaway comment that no one's commented on. And I think this is going to be a Bro Show exclusive. He did a throwaway comment that was just parenthetical, under his breath, indicating what his status is. He's a private citizen between opportunities.
Yeah, he left the impression that he's got a few irons in the fire. He's working on, and to be continued will be very interesting.
What could he do? Well, my thoughts, this guy ought to run for the Senate somewhere and or the House of Representatives. No, I don't think president. I'm not sure he'd even make a good president, but I'd like to see how he does in a situation like that. And he's got a good background for it. He handles, obviously, he can handle the press if he can handle those guys. And it has to be said, John, he's 6'8". We need a tall president again. We need a tall senator again. You know, we need tall people. Let's just say it. And we're not tall, but I think we admire it in other people, right? Our friend Walter Timms is super tall.
Yeah.
He has his advantages.
He carries himself. I mean, he's a tall guy who is, I'm just trying to look to see a little bit here. So see, how old is he? He's born in 1960. So he's fairly young.
Yeah.
You know, he's got some mileage in front of him.
Yeah, but, I think so. Yeah, I think it could happen. And we'll have to keep an eye on this and see what goes on. But, you know, my overwhelming takeaway from the whole thing was I was just astounded by his performance. Again, he thought on his feet. And plus, this was better than his first interrogation with the House because he's a private citizen and he's outraged. He's an outraged private citizen who is not remorseful over what he did because everything he does, he really thinks about it morally, logically, legally, and he doesn't always do what everybody wants him to do, but he feels he does the right thing. Looking back, yeah, I might have changed this or that, but you can't look back and you can't change things. That's what I did. I'm going to live with it, and you guys have to live with it too. And he just throws that right back at people's face in a very subtle but commanding way, and he can answer a question quickly, easily. He's got a good memory. He's smart. And when he can't give you an answer because it's classified, he does it better than anybody else. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I think his resume includes a fair amount of religion. He's a United Methodist, and he's been a Sunday school teacher. So, you know, he's not just one of these Christmas goers.
Uh-uh.
So he's got that on his resume. Let's just take a look. He went to the College of William and Mary. I kind of always impressed with that school.
Yes, me too.
And got his law degree at the University of Chicago. So he's got an incredibly good pedigree. Mm. Yeah, he's got good schools. He's got a little religion in his background. And he's primed for some interesting things. Needless to say, it'll be interesting to see how it unfolds, these opportunities that he, like, as you mentioned, indirectly, subtly, under the, you know, under his breath, practically, a stage whisper, made comments regarding. So that's all good.
Yeah, yeah. I think so. What happened at the end of the whole thing? What's the bottom line? Good theater. Trump had his response yesterday, which I didn't even listen to. I just saw a couple headlines. It's such. I can't even think of a word for it. But there it is, you know. And so it goes on. The only thing is, what the takeaway is, the special prosecutor, who we've already talked about in another show, he will carry the day when it comes to this stuff. Because I don't think anyone can control him. And this prompted another exchange between a senator and someone from Justice, this Rodstein, yeah, whatever his name is.
This is Senator Harris, the junior senator from Clay, California. The day before, really tried to pigeonhole this guy to say, "Look, are you going to make the special prosecutor independent to the point that he will not be fired?" And of course, the weasel that he is, Rodstein. No disrespect. He's a career,
career weasel.
Department of Justice guy. And he was trying to answer the question without answering it with, using a lot of words. And finally they had to censure the the senator because she just kept up push.
She was good. I liked her style.
She was good. I like her style too. That lady, unfortunately she's on the low end of the totem pole with respect to the committee. I read where she's the junior member of the committee. She's on the minority party of the committee.
Yep.
She's a minority.
Yeah, she's got it all.
Got all the bases covered in terms of being what you call the last person who's going to be able to say anything.
I tell you, though, she's a fine-looking, telegenic woman.
Yeah, she's got a lot of energy. I think she, of all of them, I respected the most. I would say, to summarize, like you've done already in terms of the effect of all this, is there's a headline in the Sun-Times by the D.C. correspondent Lynn Sweet that says, Comey packs plenty of punch, but no KO.
Yep.
So the fact is that, you know, there's a lot of good stuff here that they might build on, but we got to go a little bit further. And I think what we took out of it through our discussions, Jerry, is the fact that I think it puts Ryan is his name?
Yes.
You know, the
head of the house.
Well, no. Who's the fellow who, I've just lost his name.
Oh, yeah, you're talking about the Senate? McConnell?
No, I'm talking about the fellow who was fired right away and who's basically
Flynn,
Michael Flynn. I apologize for getting the names mixed up. Too many players here.
Hey, too much baseball.
Flynn is I think what it does. He's working on a deal.
Yes.
And I think in order to go to the committee and get immunity. And basically this kind of he's the next step as far as I can see, or something comparable. They just need more evidence.
They need someone
that's
to
more
spill.
Explosive.
They need someone to spill. They need, like in Watergate, they need someone to break down and say the truth. And he's not going to break down. He wants to say the truth, but he wants a deal. And so they denied the deal for months now, but now I think they're waiting to see what they can get out of Comey.
Right.
So like you said, no knockout punch. Now this sounds like the Democratic agenda, and to an extent I think it is, but I think the Republicans are slowly creeping over to it because they're getting very nervous about 2018 and 2020 and Trump. They don't have coattails. The coattails are getting shorter. So they may go along with this stuff, and this is perfect because they can blame it on the Democrats, you know. That's probably gonna happen. I think you're right, John. I think they are. I think the deal is probably on the table now, and we'll see what happens. Stay tuned. That's all you can say, really.
It's stay tuned, right? Exactly. I mean, it's a nice opening episode. But we got a series going on here.
A new franchise. This should be a comic book.
Yeah,
that's the relationship between our
process.
Movie.
I mean,
that's the relationship between our movie and our fake news today.
Yeah, but the point being that you have to understand that the Senate Intelligence Committee, they can't do anything. The ones who can do something is the special prosecutor.
Correct.
So they're going to connect with each other, and you know they're going to share information. They're going to have to coordinate their efforts. But the Senate Committee Intelligence Committee reports to the Senate.
Yes,
they report their findings.
Right.
And that and where it goes from there is the Senate. So this is a long process if it's. The piece that we've seen here. Now, that's not to say that what they come up with can't be used by the other players.
Right.
Basically, the special prosecutor.
Right.
But this could be a long, drawn-out deal.
Yeah, and I think the role that the Senate and the House play with their committees. Yeah, what they do here is that they can go on TV with it. Mueller, the special prosecutor, cannot. So.
Oh, yeah, he's low profile. He's under the radar without a doubt.
So there's an interesting dynamic here, is that I said theater, and it is theater, because in this little drama, we will be able to see what we're allowed to see, of course, and this will be like, it's the way of taking temperature of what's going on in the House and the Senate, how much support Trump has or not has, will tell how much we see and don't see. I was surprised that we got to see what we got to see. So we'll see what happens.
And by the way,
you never know.
It's worth noting that there's a lot that we can't see because they did meet. They had a closed session also with questions that that Comey mentioned he can't do, you know, in a public format, in a forum.
Yep.
So that's also part of it. But, you know, the thing I get out of all of this is it's a civics lesson to me. It's understanding government, which I mean, quite often, you know, you go to school, you learn it, and it just kind of. You forget a lot of it, and this is like a refresher course in understanding government.
True. We've had to look at everything, right?
Yeah, and that's the way I always look at it. Look at it, the broader picture here of what I'm learning. I'm not only learning a specific incident, but I'm learning the machinery under which this all takes place, which is right. something I learned about a long time ago. But believe me, refresher course doesn't hurt.
Nope, it sure doesn't. Mr. Cox, I'm sure, is pleased with how much we're learning, our civics teacher.
Yeah.
Very funny. Well, anyways, that's another topic. So we'll have to take this up some other time because we've hit our limit and passed it. And great talk, John.
Good stuff.
Good stuff.
Okay.
I will check you out tomorrow.
Okay. See you then, Jerry.